what is this building that we're standing in?
The building was originally the what they called the doghouse, and this was where the building where the dials, the pyrometers, and the workers could monitor the kill temperatures, and also where they got in out of the weather while they were feeding coal into the port, into the burner ports, because each kill has 10 burner ports around it that had to be constantly kept fired with coal. But they couldn't raise the temperature too extremely fast, so they watched the pyrometers that were actually stuck into the roof of the kill and monitored the temperature rise and then recorded it. And as each day, an hour went, they recorded the temperatures, and that's where these gauges were inside this building, and that was called the doghouse. So
the doghouse?
The doghouse. How it got that name, we really don't know. It was always referred to that. I've interviewed, or not interviewed, but met and sort of talked to a lot of old workers that were here, and they always walked up to this building and go, oh, the doghouse is still standing. And we get inside when we actually got the gauges out of it in 1991 and two, we start seeing some of the stuff like the names on the walls that were written that were scratched in with pocket knives and whatever, and Leroy and Mike and Hi. And this you can still see this rough hewn round saw bladed wood, because it was just a temporary structure, I really think. But we figure somewhere, it's probably somewhere around 100 to 110 years old. And it has been moved. It's on skids, like it's not on a foundation, and we think they drug it over by this particular spot so they could be centrally located between the kills, because at the time there were 7 kills running, and this was where they monitored all of them. So there was little wires going to pyrometers, and then we found the gauge, finally the actual pyrometer gauge, but there was actually a selector dial that I'm still rebuilding because it really was in bad shape, but they could select the kill number, and then the temperature would respond on the monitor, on the mm-hmm. pyrometer. And then over here, this was a recording gauge that recorded the 24-hour temperature, actually for days, and it recorded it so they could look back and make sure that the kill temperature came up and came down and was annealed and the bricks were properly fired at the time. And then they saved those papers. The paper actually comes out of that, and they could put it in.
And I imagine some of the artifacts in here you would have found around the grounds here, and some of this has been donated by former workers?
Absolutely. During the time that we've been rebuilding and saving and renovating this and trying to save it, we find significant artifacts, bricks, types of bricks, bricks with signatures, bricks with names, and we've actually found a brick with Moses King's signature on it. And we know it's his signature because we've compared it to the tax rolls in archives at Western University where they keep all the old taxes. When he used to sign the tax book, it's the same signature. And he signed a wet brick and they fired it. And we happened to find that brick. It's amazing that we did. But a lot of workers, we have a block that was scratched in by Killy Waggle. We have a lot of older workers with dates, and sometimes we'd find a block that had White Sox 6 and then somebody 4 and
from Colchester,
probably a lot of them had names that looked like it referred to national baseball things and the date and the weather, and these guys put their handprints in bricks. So anytime we found something unique like that, we saved it, and we kind of set it aside, but we didn't have a place to do it, which is when Dev thought this building would be the perfect one to store and to make into the Museum of Artifacts. And we started the process, and we had volunteer help from WICMA at Western. They helped, the construction guys came out and helped do this, helped me get started. Once we got rolling, Dev and I took over, and we've been rebuilding the one-third of the building and put a new roof on it so that it was watertight. And then we started moving all these artifacts into here. And what we really hope to do is to have a nice, dry, safe place to keep this for people to see eventually as we get open, which is always our dream, is to get open to the public. But right now, you can call and take a tour, and this museum will be part of the tour. We'll show people what's going on. And we've had donations from wonderful people of different artifacts that they found out we were doing this, and they went out and either gave it to us outright or just, said, here you go. I mean, it was really kind of neat. And we have a history behind several of these old birdhouses that are unique to, we didn't even know existed. I mean, we'd never found them around here, but people started showing up going, hey, I've got this, and we've got different designs. And So this is just a culmination of just getting it all into one place so people can see all the different types of things that the Brickyard produced over the period of 90 years that it was in production. This isn't all of them, but this is an awful lot of the different products. And we still find things, and that's what it's all about.
Stumbling across the brick with Moses King's signature on it, is that like stumbling across a needle in the haystack?
Yeah, that's the Holy Grail is what that is. That is totally what it's like. I mean, we had no concept that that even existed because there are MK bricks that we've had displayed, which are Moses King bricks, but they're stamped. Everything was stamped, Moses King or M. King, Colchester, whatever. We came across this quite by accident in a pile and looked and saw that it had a rough signature. We cleaned it up and started realizing it was Moses King's signature. And he died, you know, he started this thing and then died in 1909. And to have that brick stick around this long for us to find it. It was, and that's why it's in pride of place. It's right there in the center.
You have a book here with, among other things, if I read it correctly, it gives an idea of where bricks from here eventually were shipped off to.
Oh, absolutely. That's actually a copy of our National Historic Register application.
Okay.
And that's the document that sits at the National Archives in D.C. It sits over at the Malpass Library, and we have a copy of it here. And it goes through the whole process of how the Brickyard started, how you, in order to do to get on the National Register, you have to prove every minute of its existence and how it started, where it went to, from the point that Moses King bought this land from Myers, an L. Myers, for $150 and started this brickyard. In fact, there was a brickyard, and we found out this the other day, the distance, it was 450 foot south of here, was a brickyard called Colchester Paving Brick Company. So there were a lot of brickyards in Colchester, and Moses King bought this land with nothing on it and started mining coal. So this
right.
book goes through the whole process of how each segment of land was acquired, from who it was acquired, how the buildings went about, and then in the end it talks about where all the bricks that were used in the Lemoyne Hotel, some of the bricks came from here, Grant School, some of the bricks came from here, so there's sidewalks throughout Macomb that were put in the 1890s and 1900s, and if you look closely at them, every once in a while you'll see a brick that's stamped M. King Colchester, and those bricks were all made right here in this brickyard, and then taken to Macomb for sidewalks, and they're still out there, and they're still, you know, people still walking on them. But that's what the part of the National Historic Register is. You have to prove all of this beyond a shadow of a doubt before you actually are allowed to become a National Historic Site, let alone a National Historic District, which is all these buildings and the two houses. So it's a lot of fun, but we have it out in the open where you can read it, special window by it, and people are, you know, it's in a protective sleeves. People that want to come and look in the museum, they can flip through it and read about the brickyard.
The floor for the museum is made of brick. I take it you had no trouble finding bricks for this?
Actually, these bricks came out of the one kiln that fell down, that's over there, the fallen kiln,
mm-hmm.
which we pulled these out, and Dev laid every one of them. I bring them over here, and it's set down. We found out the other day when we were doing this that there was a concrete pad poured here a long, long time ago where this building sits. But the brick had to be, we brought it in to get the feel, and it's a brickyard.
why open your own little museum here? This is a small one-room museum, rather than, say, giving some of the stuff you found to the Western Illinois Museum or Western Illinois University Archives or whatever.
One of the things we felt, Rich, was the fact that this is where all of this material came from. We have the ability to keep it secure and keep it safe and to share it. Too often when things are dispersed in a fashion into other facilities, they don't have the ability to show all of it all the time, because we've had this at the Western Illinois Museum, a lot of it, and we did a show, but it's just a show. This was a permanent collection, and we felt that it really belonged here and in the brickyard where these things were made and the history, because we still have the dream of getting this place, the whole brickyard, open to the public and be one monstrous 10-acre museum of how bricks were done and how the region was affected by the clay, the coal, the workers, because that's a big part of McDonough County, really big part, back in the, especially between the 1850s all the way up into the 1960s. So
What's your favorite artifact in here?
Other than the Moses King brick, which, which, you know, that one's really kind of special. But one of the things that really, really intrigues me are the birdhouses. These birdhouses that these workers made personally. It wasn't ever sold. They were working alongside making bricks and tile, and they fashioned their own little version of it and signed them. And I'm sure that management didn't care. I mean, you put another piece in the kiln and it goes through the thing. But they're all individually signed. Yeah, these are tile. These were tile that they cut, and then they poked a little hole in it, put the little roof on it. And then this one's a whole different design. And then this one down here that George Beckman gave us, it's even got the little bird stoop right here where they can sit onto it. He pushed that wire into the clay before it was fired and then added the shingle tops after it was done and signed it, Colchester Brick and Tile Company. I mean, they did it. It was just personal things. But it's neat that they lived and they finally got back home. That's kind of what we feel like. It's really neat to have.
All right. Anything you want to add about this?
Just know that we enjoy doing this, Rich. We really do. And it's been a struggle for 20 years and we're still struggling, but it's we have some wonderful supporters, and that's one of the things that's going on here this evening is a thank you thing for the supporters who have donated monetarily and physically to the Brickyard. And this museum is part of it. It's really part of it. And we're just happy to be part of it. And we're happy to save it is what we're trying to do. I mean, it feels good. Sounds kind of, I don't know, kind of thought, you know, I mean, you kind of wonder why do you do it, but it's because it needs to be done. I really think it does. So Dev and I are going to keep doing it.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Rich.